Hi, I'm Mackenzie, and this is the Mill Spouse Brief. Happy Friday. I hope you guys had a wonderful week. Our week was really busy. I had work almost like every, I actually had work every day this week, which was nice to finally be back in the office every day, even though it's kind of been like, not difficult, but like interesting to adjust to going into the office every single day. It actually has been really nice to one, see my coworkers. I felt like we kind of got into a really good routine, which was really nice. Cade had a super busy week with work. When I used to do the job that he's doing now with my dad, we called it Hell Week. And so it's just when you have so many counties that need to get their ballots set up before UACAVA, which is like when the military ballots have to go out, because I think you have to give them like 45 days from the election to be able to vote. And so all the counties get their ballots finalized and then have to get them set up so they can send them out by a specific date. So it can get a little stressful. And then in Ohio, the Secretary of State changed something and allowed the like someone to be added to the ballot. And because of that, then everyone had to redo their ballot. So the people that kind of got set up early and had their stuff ready, they had to be reset up. So it kind of has been stressful, but it's been a really good learning opportunity for Cade. And so it's been fun to help him. You know, I loved doing the job with my dad and I was really sad to go. And so it's been fun to kind of get my toes wet again and help Cade and talk to customers and things like that in my downtime when I get home from work in the evenings. And my grandparents, are coming tomorrow. So I'm really excited to spend the weekend with them and I feel like it'll be super fun. I have some fun things planned to explore Norfolk and just hang out with them before they go up north to DC. And it's actually getting really close to when I go to DC, so that will be really exciting. I'm super fun for that. I talked about it last week, but we went to a concert on Saturday and it was amazing. If you haven't heard of Zach Bryan, please check him out. He is the best, and it was totally worth all the traffic and the drive. It was a super fun night, and I'm really grateful that Kate and I were able to make these memories. I was talking to a friend this week on the phone and, you know, kind of talking about adjusting to Norfolk and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things I was talking about was that it's kind of been hard to not really have a community here yet in Norfolk, you know, because we had such an amazing community in California and it was really hard to leave that community that we had. But I talked about how I feel like right now the season is really to like focus on Kate and I and like pour into our relationship, especially since I have so many, you know, like underways and deployments coming up and I'll be gone. And so I am really grateful that Kate and I have been able to have so much time together and really strengthen our foundation and our relationship. And I feel like that is what I'm focusing on in the sense of like what season of life I'm in. So as much as I'm sometimes a little sad that I don't have like a community or like a girl group here yet in Norfolk, I definitely am excited that I have gotten to have so much time with Cade and to make memories with him and to grow our relationship. And so it's been really fun just because almost all the time we've ever been together is long distance, and the future will continue to be long distance. So I am very grateful that I have this time with him. And I feel like our house is pretty much almost completely done and set up. So it's been really nice to get that finished. And today on the podcast, we have Malcolm Clinton, and he was my Candio at OCS. And so he was gracious enough to come on and talk about his experience being enlisted and then how he switched to the officer route and what he did and what he learned. And it was a great conversation. So I really hope you enjoy it. I am so grateful for the podcast, and I feel like when I was talking to my friend about the community, I realized that the podcast was something that truly allowed me to grow my community and really start it when I thought back to like how I met all of my friends when I was in California. So I am really excited to continue to be doing it in Norfolk. And I feel like when I go up to DC and do my schoolhouse, I'll be able to meet so many different people from different branches because it's a joint school. And so it'll be really cool to get to know people from different branches and hopefully interview them. So I'm really excited about that. And without further ado, here is Malcolm Clinton. All right, so I'm here with Malcolm. How about you introduce yourself?
All right, so good day. My name is Malcolm J. Clinton. I'm an ensign in the United States Navy. I'm originally from San Antonio, Texas. Yeah, southern United States. I joined the Navy at 17 out of San Antonio. I joined as an aviation bosun mate fueler, so I wore purple on the flight deck.
So what are, like, what's the difference between purple and like yellow or green or, you know, top gun?
Okay, so real, real quick crash course into that. Green is equipment as well as maintainers for the air squadron. Okay. Red is crash and salvage as well as ordnance. Blue is chuck and chain, so they tie down the aircraft. Yellow is flight deck cheerleaders, really, but they direct the aircraft and they
also
shoot.
So they're like the guys in the Top Gun are like,
and drop to the deck.
Go!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you got purple, which is just fuel and stuff like that.
Okay. So
that was my primary job when I first joined the Navy.
What you chose? Like, did you want to do that? Or was that kind of like the list that the recruiter put in front of you and was like, this is going to be a great job?
So yeah, it's actually, I'm one of those classic stories where the recruiter kind of got it over on me.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be a firefighter in the Navy. And I was always told that everybody in the Navy is a firefighter, so it didn't really matter, you know? So I wanted to be a D-Seaman. Well, when I went and took the test and all that stuff, scores were fine, nothing wrong with that. But they were like, oh, well, DC isn't available, but you mean ABF. And I was like, oh, F has to mean firefighter, you know? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. Well, come to find out when I get to the ship and they start training me that as someone who works with fuel all day and is probably soaked with fuel all day, I will never fight the fire.
Oh, because so, you didn't catch on fire.
Yeah, that was a...
That's tough. So how was that? Like, you know, like, did you end up loving it? Or was it like, yeah, dang, this is tough. Like, this is not what I wanted.
No, it's an amazing, amazing community. I honestly am glad I went ABF versus some of the others because... Just like the sense of camaraderie we had and like the tight-knit group and like, hey, you mess with our guys, we're going to mess with you kind of thing. Like, just something about being a purple shirt that, I don't know, everybody loves grapes. It's just
Dude,
one of those
that's
things.
So cool. So where all did you, if you're obviously always on an aircraft carrier?
No, so my first two ships were LHD, so I was on LHD-2, USS Essex out of Sasebo, Japan.
Oh, wow.
And then in 2012, we did the whole swap with USS Bonhomme Richard, LHD-6, RIP. And then after that, I went to Virginia to CVN-69 USS Eisenhower.
Okay.
And after that, I went to NASSUP Yokosuka in Yokosuka, Japan.
Wow.
Where I worked at the fuel terminal. So, yeah.
That's so cool. See, because like, I would have assumed that you always had to be in a carrier, but there's so many other places and things that you could be.
Basically, anything that can carry aircraft for any amount of time, we can get stationed on there. So, like the two USNS hospital ships we have, we have ABFs on those, LSDs, LPDs, LHAs, carriers.
Wow. What was it like living in Japan?
Oh, God, it was amazing.
Did you like it?
There was nothing I didn't like about living in Japan.
And you went to Sasebo and Yokosuka.
Mm-hmm.
Which one was better?
Tough question. I like Sasebo because it was really small.
Mm-hmm.
It was like literally in the middle of nowhere and there's a lot of nice mountains and forests and, you know, hiking and stuff like that to get outside. In fact, they shot the opening to The Last Samurai out there on one of the islands. It's really pretty.
Oh, wow.
But Yokosuka is super close to Tokyo. You know, you're about 45 minutes to go to Tokyo and do all that. So kind of pick your flavor of the week.
Get to go see. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So how long were you enlisted?
Oh God. Too damn long. 9 years, 7 months, and like 15 days.
Okay, so explain your thought process of like, hey, I want to go officer.
Like the whole process?
Just like what made you decide that you wanted to do that?
Baseline, like on the very edge of the surface, I just knew, in the best way of saying, I deserved more than being enlisted.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was just quote unquote too smart for that.
Mm-hmm.
But like when you get like deeper into it, it was a lot of spite, a lot of people who told me it wasn't going to happen, like, I wasn't going to amount to anything. I was a statistic, XYZ, you know?
Yeah.
So
you really wanted to, like, prove them wrong.
Exactly, yeah.
And you did.
Yeah, I definitely did. As long as it took, yeah, I pulled it off, so.
Okay, so you started doing your package, and you're a surface warfare officer.
Mm-hmm.
What made you decide to do that designator?
Okay, we got to back that a little here. Okay, so I actually got out of the Navy for a year and some change in 2020.
Okay.
Because the one bad side about being an ABF was that advancement to first class was almost impossible.
Oh.
The last time I took the test to make first class, we had made, I think, two ABF-1s out of like 300 and however many people took the test.
Oh my goodness.
So like it was impossible.
Yeah.
And so in my head, I'd already been taking college classes because I was in shore duty. In my head, it was easier to get out of the Navy, finish my six classes I needed to finish, and then come back in through OCS than it was to make first class. Now, luckily, it worked out like that, but like Yeah, that was the way I did it. So,
and it's interesting, like, as I've been a military spouse and like become a naval officer and all that kind of stuff, how interesting promotions are depending on the community.
Yeah.
It's been wild to me to see somebody make first class in less than 7 years and have some people barely make first class for 15 years.
Exactly.
Like, that's just wild to me. And it's, you can look at their package and they're not identical, but they're close. You know, like, there's not some huge difference, you mm-hmm. know? And so it's just so interesting to me, like, how the advancement rates are so different depending on the ratings. Like, that's just kind of crazy to me to, like, even kind of wrap my brain around, because you talk to so many people and that's why they get out. That's why they leave, because they're like, why would I stay here? Why would I continue to do all of this and struggle, not get paid more, and not have more responsibility?
Right. And that's one of those things that I think needs to be talked about a lot, especially when we're talking about, like, big Navy and how they, like, condone, or not condone, but, like, how they conduct their business, is that what you just said. Some communities, like you said, they'll make chief in, like, 7 years. I'm like, how? But, you know, here I've been in for 7 years and I barely picking up third, you know. I mean, yeah. I made it faster than that, but still. Like, a really good friend of mine, he's been in for going on almost 12 years now, and if he doesn't make first class in the next 3 cycles, then he's getting higher tenured out.
Yeah.
And he's a great sailor. Nothing wrong with him whatsoever, but because of the way we have it structured and the way evals are made and XYZ for the enlisted side of the house, it's almost impossible for these people to continue their naval career because of the way we have.
And it's interesting, so I was on the Divo course last week.
Okay.
And we did an exercise about evals, you know, and learning about them and ranking them and how we do all that kind of stuff. And what was really interesting is, like, talking to it, you know, we had a, I think we had a first, we had an E5. Yeah, it was an HM2.
Mm-hmm.
And they were about to be high tenure.
That's a hard one, yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, my first thought was, like, his eval was great. Like, why are we not promoting, you know? And then one of the sailors, who's actually a Mustang, was like, well, are we a sympathy board? And so it was so interesting to, like, see and understand that, because it's so hard. You know, like, you have a sailor and then it's like, oh, well, why would you promote them? And maybe they're a bad test taker. And I don't know. The dynamic is so complex that I did not realize truly. And, like, it really makes or breaks who's on the board.
Yeah.
And it makes and breaks, like, who wrote your eval. You know, like, and so, I don't know, that was something that has really shocked me in this last, like, couple months, learning about this and, like, writing evaluations for my sailors and, like, truly, like, what you have to put into them. And it kind of, like, it makes me sad, because, like you said, you're going to have people that leave the Navy and have a bitter taste in their mouth because it's almost like a failed system.
Yeah, absolutely. And just on a fundamental level, that's why, like you said, it's so important that you, like, really put all that you got into these evals, because their life is literally on a piece of paper for you. And if you cross a T or X an I or whatever the hell they say, like, you know, you could have just thrown their entire chances of promoting out the window. And it's...
Because that's what he said. He also told me that when we were looking through them, that if you take someone that has an EP, which means early promote for people listening, and you don't continue to put them as an early promote and you drop them down to a must promote. Is that what MP stands for?
Yes, must promote.
Yeah. That can take 3 years to, like, not wipe off there, but, like, 3 years to, like, overcome getting dropped from an EP to an MP.
Yeah.
And so that's what, like, I'm just like, ah, like, and I just, it blew my mind.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Okay. So,
yeah,
fast forward. You decide you want to be a SWO.
Yeah, okay, so.
You do your package.
Yeah, again, SWO.
So what made you choose SWO?
It was kind of, might hurt the community a little when I hear this. It was kind of like a last, like, resort, quote unquote. It was like my safety. I wanted to be a pilot, you know. I worked in the aviation field when I was enlisted. I could fly planes. I'm an aeronautical engineer. Like, as far as, like, paper goes, everything about my naval career and where I wanted to go in life was aviation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I applied the first time, and I put nothing but pilot, and they were like, nah. I was like, okay. Second time was, like, pilot, NFO, AMDO. They were like, nah. I was like, tried it again, same 3. I was like, God, okay, what's going on? They just were not picking me up. And so I was like, okay, pilot, NFO, AMDO. And just because I was at that point where I'd already been out for about a year and some change, I was like, I just need to get back into the Navy.
Yeah.
I put surface warfare because it's just a catch-all. And as soon as I put surface warfare, they were like, okay, yeah, let's go. And I was like, you know what? It's fine. I'm, okay, cool, let's go. And so, yeah. And then January of this year, I showed up at OCS. And
all right, so let's talk about that. So talk about your experience at OCS, and then once we get to Candia, we'll talk about what it was like being over my class.
Okay.
So you get to OCS in January.
So yeah, I show up January 1st, literally the first thing I do of this year, like literally the first thing. I show up and I'm there for like 54 seconds and they're like, hey bud, you got COVID. Go to ROM. And I was like, oh no. And so they throw me in a room for 2.5 weeks and yeah, so I missed my like class date. So I was originally
going to be part of what?
08. I was originally part of 08.
Okay.
And so I immediately quote unquote rolled for
that. And did a lot of people?
There was, because
we had like what, 15 people in my class that rolled for COVID.
Yeah, there was 6 of us.
Okay.
Yeah, there were 6 of us that rolled for COVID. And so I did that whole thing and then I went through age and I classed up and all that stuff. And then I classed up with 09 and yeah, so I went through First Friday and they got me for First Friday.
Okay.
And so I rolled again. And so I was like, okay, cool. And then I just took that time to kind of like work on myself and like get my head right and stuff like that.
How did you, because as our Candio, you were so motivating. You were so helpful. You had the best advice. You were full of wisdom. So like, how did you take, because you see people in H, which mm-hmm. is holding company at OCS, you see people become their worst enemy, you know,
right.
Go internal. So how did you stay positive? How did you keep pushing? How did you say like, all right, this is time for me to work on myself versus like, how am I going through this? I'm a freaking prior.
So shout out to my boy Hughes, man, if he's listening. He was the CEO of H at the time. He'd been down there for like 15 weeks when I went down there the second time. It was just this whole long thing. And he had that great mindset of like, you know, you're down here and it sucks, yeah, but like, you're still here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as you're here and not on your, you know, plane ride home, then you still have a chance. So yeah. You could sit there and like feel sorry for yourself and, you know, feel bad about it and stuff like that, but like, you're given the opportunity to be here, so utilize it. And so once you get through that first little minute and a half of like, damn, this sucks, you know, mm-hmm. I gotta be here for 3 more weeks, blah, 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 it gets better. And like, honestly, we were kind of hugged in H. Like, we got to go work out, we got to go do, you know, the pool stuff, and like, they trained us. So by the time I actually classed up with the class I was supposed to be with, 1-0, shout out to those guys, I was so ready for it that like, nothing was gonna like, stand in my way. And then a lot of it is like, again, the support system. The other guys that rolled with me from 09, like Marisi, Carmichael, Mattingly, O'Hearn, yeah. All those guys, you know, like they really, we kind of stuck together and were like, look, we're in this together, so we're gonna get through this. So.
And that was something I saw that was really cool. Whether you were H or you started with like your original class, like by the end of it, you really build some tough, strong friendships. And it's really cool.
Yeah,
you know,
it
like
is.
It's just awesome to experience.
So I'm pretty sure, I'm almost 100% positive, I said it a couple times to y'all's class, but the whole, you know, I've come this far, I can go a little bit further. That's something Hugh said every single night at quarters in mm-hmm. H. And like, I know a lot of people said, oh, it's Hallmark as hell, but like, dude, that little thing like got me through a lot, because they're absolutely right. You've come this far, you can go a little bit further, yeah. A little bit further, and so you're there, so.
Oh, that's cool. Do you know that I was actually supposed to be part of 1-0?
What?
Yeah, so I was supposed to go in February, but because of Cade's orders, my orders, all that kind of stuff, I wrote like Big Navy a letter, right. And I just said like, hey, this won't work. So if I go in February, my house will be like completely empty for months because of my husband's field schedule. Can I please go in April? And they approved it the next day. My recruiter was like, I've never seen something like this go through.
Yeah.
And so that's why I ended up being part of 1-3.
It's always easy to win before you're in the Navy. Once you're in the Navy, it's impossible to be in the Navy.
But, okay, so you get there.
Yeah.
And explain your thought process on picking your Candio job.
Oh, damn, we're going right to that.
Or do you want to talk about anything?
I have so much to say.
Do you want to talk about anything?
Yeah, so, like, you're back to say about that whole, like, impressive OCS, like, in the moment, I thought, like, OCS was, like, an absolute madhouse. Like, it was just crazy and unruly and just, like, a godless wasteland, you know? But, like, looking back, I think OCS is probably one of the best courses the Navy has to offer
mm-hmm.
because it does so much in such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And, like, they say it all the time in OCS, like, we just want to get the best product to the fleet, you know, like, mission of the Navy, blah,
yeah.
blah. You know, and they're absolutely right because, like, a lot of the OCS guys coming out, or girls and guys and girls coming out, in my opinion, are a little bit on the edge than like the academy people, which is crazy because they've been there for 4 years.
Yeah.
Whereas we've only been there for 13 weeks. But.
So talk about what it was like being a prior.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because in my mind, like, becoming in as a civilian, priors had so much knowledge.
Yeah.
Like, almost all of my friends were priors.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you guys are just so knowledgeable. Yeah. But at the same time, like, at OCS, I felt, and, like, you probably experienced it, that you kind of have a target on your back.
Exactly.
Especially, like, I feel like when you're in Indoc, the only way they're going to tell if you're a prior is if you have your old camis that
right.
have your pin on them.
Oh, no, they
okay?
know. They know immediately.
Or then you start wearing khakis.
Right.
And all of a sudden you stick out
right.
like a sore thumb. Because all of a sudden you don't just have one small tiny little ribbon. You have 10 and you have a pin.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're like, and you know, then like for like Casper and all them, they have tridents, you know,
oh,
like,
Casper. Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
like, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, how is it being a prior at OCS?
Out of everything that I had to go through at OCS, I think me being a prior was one of the hardest things to overcome. Because, like you just said, it's a blessing and a curse because, yes, I'm prior. I've been around the block more times than I can count. I know, like, I know the end goal.
Mm-hmm.
So because when you know the end goal, like, when you know, like, this is the ending of the movie, it's hard to enjoy the rest of the movie up until that point because I know, like, a lot of the stuff they're going to tell you and teach us is, like, it's not nonsense, but it's just, like, come on, man, really?
This isn't the real Navy.
Exactly. And that mentality is what I think, like, holds a lot of priors back in OCS.
Okay.
They always say, like, you know, being a prior is going to either make or break you. In my case, it made me because when I got to 1-0, I was so hyped to be part of that class to start training finally after being in H and stuff that I jumped right into it. I wanted to be CO. I was XO first, and I took over as CO, and then...
Do you know that I was CO?
I did, yeah, I heard, yeah.
I was shook. I literally looked at my chief and I said, is there a mistake? And then Lieutenant Duffy said, no, we just thought you were flying under the radar too much. And I was like, that was my plan. My plan was to fly under the radar.
Exactly. They find out. But you have all that knowledge and you want to like utilize it. You want to utilize it and you want to help and you just want to like save everybody. But then there's that moment of realization when you like understand that you can't do all these things for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when you start to like kind of ease back and you're just like, damn, like I can't. And so like when something goes wrong, when something happens, the immediate response is like, we've got to ask a prior. And so they like scramble to find you and they're bothering you when you're trying to work on your things when like, you know, it's just, it's a lot. It's a lot of pressure because you're held to a higher expectation without being held to a higher expectation.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they know. They know who the priors are. They know a mile away because... When I was in 09, I was getting fit for my cover. They were like, you're that prior ABF, aren't you? And I was like, I hadn't talked to them, like my class team at all, but they already knew. I didn't have to say anything. And so, yeah. But yeah, it's just, it's difficult. It's difficult to unlearn everything that you've learned for literal years. You're
especially
so
like being in the
afraid.
Fleet for so long
exactly.
and having... Like, real fleet experience.
Like, these rates, these priors that are, like, on shore facilities all the time, like, your prior, and no disrespect to anybody, but, like, you know, they've been on a base their whole career, you know, they've never been on a ship or stuff like that, and, you know, they come in, it's a little easier for them because, like, when you're living, like, on a base or something, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, I can do this, right? But when you're, like, on a ship and you're so set in your habits on, like, how you speak to, like, the chain of command because when you're operational underway, like, a lot of that formality goes out the window.
Yeah.
You just don't have time for it. You know, it's hard to unlearn. Like, I cannot tell you how many times I've almost called Chief Igwe Chief before we were jocks. Like, almost every damn day, I'd be like, shh, sir.
Yeah.
You know, and he knew. Because he'd, like, always give me this look, and it's just like, yeah, you know, my bad. But as soon as, like, we passed that phase, it was just, like, back to business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why, like, your chief, Chief Imfield, was always, like, really great with me because, you know, he knew I was a prior, and he knew I knew that.
Okay,
nonsense.
So talk about what it was like. Oh, wait, hold on. I'm getting ahead of myself. Best and worst parts of OCS.
Okay. Best part, honestly, I think the food was great. Like, man.
You weren't there for the peanut butter recall.
There's a peanut butter recall?
Yeah. Oof. We went almost 3 weeks without peanut butter.
Oh, my God. No peanut butter. Whatever will they do? No.
It's tough. It's real tough. I'm not even kidding. I had a peanut butter and banana sandwich every single day from weeks 1 to week 6.
Wow.
Three times a day. It was rough.
No, honestly, the best part of OCS, just overall experience, just like making all the great friends and the Navy family and stuff like that. Like, that's fun. I love that part. And then the worst part was, just how malicious it felt like the staff could be at times for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Like, I know it wasn't personal and they were just doing their job, but, like, sometimes you just, like, sat there and like,
go ham on something.
It's like they were screaming about something. I had literally no idea what was going on. I was just like, I literally just woke up. I haven't brushed my teeth yet. Like, what is going on? You know?
Side note, Supply School went to NAY for one of their assignments and they messaged us and they said, fun fact, they break out $800, 30 cases of peanut butter packets per day.
Wow.
Like, wow. Isn't that crazy? But yeah, no, when we went out, when we didn't have peanut butter, you could read my letters and my emails. I emailed my family every single day about how badly I needed peanut butter and how much I was struggling without peanut butter. I was like, I can't do this. And like, that's what was really hard because, like, you know, the food sucks there some days. Not all the time. Breakfast is amazing, but like dinner can be rough.
I just, man. Just like I said, just the food was good. It was funny because I think it's the same food they use on the ships. It's really different.
Just tastes different. Okay, so now. What was your thought process? Because when we were in docs, I remember vividly how much everyone in doc staff said they wanted in doc staff. So talk about your thought process of why you wanted to be on in doc staff. Because I remember sitting there going, I will never be in doc staff.
Yeah, that's the general consensus. So something I've always... man, why did I pick in doc staff? Oh, God. So, yeah, okay. So like you said, like that's a general consensus, like... People always say that, like, I don't want to do in-doc staff because you're not going to sleep. And it's true. You're not.
No.
Like, it's just not something you're going to do. Which is, like, people are like, oh, it's the last 3 weeks of training. Like, I kind of just want to coast and chill. It's like, no.
I didn't realize that how badly you guys didn't sleep until I was in-doc staff. And then I thought, well, if I have to wake them up at 4:30, that means I have to be up at, like, 3:45. Mm-hmm. And then I was, like, thinking about when you guys had taps on us, too. And I was like, they were there until we literally went to bed at 9 mm-hmm. or 10 sometimes. Mm-hmm. So then... On top of that, you guys weren't even getting back to King until probably 10:15. Mm-hmm. You still have to shower. You're not going to bed till 11. Yeah. I was like, oh, they really did not sleep.
Yeah, that's a thing. And so I think that's one of the biggest reasons why I chose in-doc staff because I knew it wasn't going to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've never, ever, ever been one to take the easy route for anything. Like, if it's worth having, it's worth fighting for. You know what I mean?
That's another quote you would tell us.
And, like, I also thought about where could I make the biggest impact mm-hmm. and, like, motivate and like stuff like this in-doc. I mean, it's you're brand new, you're deer's in the headlight. Like, I remember y'all showing up that day, and we're all just like, kind of just like, okay, this is our class.
Did it feel weird watching us come in going, I can't believe I'm already a Candio?
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, God. Like, me standing there, like when I was standing there and like checking y'all in, it was also it was a cluster because, like, whatever. That's besides the point.
Wasn't the most organized.
No. And I remember like watching y'all come in, and I'm sitting there looking, and I'm sitting there. It's kind of like a like, we're not evaluating you, but, like, we're in our head, we're kind of just like, okay, like, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Okay, they're already rolling their eyes. Interesting. Like, we're kind of just, like, visually going over a bunch of stuff because we're responsible for you. Like, you're our class.
So what were your thoughts of my class?
One of the biggest things that, like, really shook me, like, to my core, like, the first time is just how quickly y'all were listening. Like... You know, at that point, I'd seen, like, 3 other classes come in before you, including my own. And, like the fact, I remember it was either me or Van Blarkin, we were telling y'all to do something, and, like, y'all just did it. And, like, that wasn't the expected response. We were expecting, like, people to like, kind of look around and, like, do what now? It was the step freeze. Step freeze. And, like, y'all caught on, like, immediately and were like, this might be easier than we thought. You know? And so just... Y'all acted like you wanted to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that motivated the hell out of me because I felt like, okay, I can work with this.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like other classes where it's like, they're all like, oh,
yeah,
let me just not, you know? And no, y'all's class was great, man. Stressful, but great.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, like we're going through in-doc and you're watching us do First Friday and Fast Cruise and RLP, you know, like what was that like watching our class and what did you think? And
so you lived through RLP and you lived through Fast Cruise and First Friday and you're like, okay, I lived through it. But like being on that side of the fence is completely different.
It's wild.
Like what really messed me up about First Friday was I remember standing there and like, they were, like, you know, giving you the whole spiel about an officer does not lie. You know, for your DI, Guerrero was, Gunnery Sergeant Guerrero was doing it. And, like, behind y'all were facing forward, so you didn't see it. every DI was just like edging, like just like waiting to pounce.
Do you know what they started doing?
Oh my god, dude.
They started doing it in K, and everyone comes in, and it's just the class team. And what they do is they had all the staff come out from behind that blue tarp.
Yes.
And so you watch them literally crawl out.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they get told to stand up and shake out. And then they look around and they just, everyone just goes ham on them. And I was like,
Like, I cannot tell you how, it was literally like watching National Geographic. Like, just a lion pride about to just go. And I'm just sitting there like, whoa. You know, like, this is not. And then, yeah, y'all did the damn thing. And then Fast Cruise. I didn't really get to see Fast Cruise as well as I would have liked to, because I was just a row guard on the side. And I was just standing there, and I was freezing. And so I was just kind
of
like...
Fast Cruise, I feel like, was my hardest evolution that I had to go through.
Yeah.
Running with the sea bag. We weren't even running, but whatever we were doing with that sea bag, it really killed me.
Yeah. That was the... I think as a candidate for any class, I think that's the hardest part, is that you know what's coming, but we can't tell you what's coming.
Yeah.
And so you try to get real creative on all these different ways that you can kind of be like, hey...
Try to do this.
Yeah. Hey, pinwheeling's important. Mm-hmm. You know, and stuff like that, or whatever. And yeah, and then RLP...
Wait, real quick with Fast Cruise, you want to know what happened with me? So we're running up that hill, and that hill about kills me, you know?
Every time.
And so we're running, and they're like, close the gap. And I was like so stressed about closing the gap, because I was like, if I don't close the gap, they're going to pull me. So all of a sudden, we're running, and Gunnery Sergeant Greenfield Bethea,
the milkman,
pulls me out of the line. And I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, no. Looks at like the group of like 10 boys behind me and goes, sprint and close the gap. And so I'm like running with him, like while my class, and I'm like, no, like I tried so hard. Like we're almost to Nimitz. He pulls me out. They close the gap. He shoves me back in line and he's like, finish. And I was like, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Which I really appreciate, because I truly was giving it my all. And I think he realized, like, if I can just have these boys close the gap and throw it back in there. So I was like, shout out to you, Gunnery Sergeant Greenville Bethea. I appreciate you.
And I think that's like, you know, it says a lot about the way OCS is structured. Like, nobody is there to fail you.
Yeah.
They're just trying to get you to be better. And if you're putting forth the effort and like trying and stuff like that, like, you're going
to
be fine.
That's what I told my indocs, was I said, and I talked to the staff about this one day. They said, like, we realize that sometimes what we ask of you is unattainable.
100%.
But if we see that you're giving it your all, that's all we care about. And so it was interesting, because the class after us, it was 1-4, I think it was, 1-4 or 1-5. They had 25 people roll for First Friday because their Candio said, don't give out. Don't put out. Like, reserve some. And so the staff just were watching people just like...
Stop.
Like, just almost chill during First Friday. So they had 25 people get pulled. I think it was... don't quote me on that number, but it was a high number.
That's mental.
And they were like... And they got on the Candios because the Candios were like, don't put out. And so then the staff members went back to the Candios and they're like, why in the world would you ever give the advice to not put out? Mm. And so that's when I was like... You have to put out. Yeah. You have to literally give until you're completely empty.
They say that whenever you can't give anymore, you still got 50%.
Yeah. But so that was what like was really interesting.
But yeah, that's... Yeah. And then RLP. Yeah. So RLP really... RLP messed me up in the sense that...
Like watching ours or doing it?
No, RLP doing it was terrible.
Who did you have?
Oh, God. Gunnery Sergeant Baudette.
Oh!
Yeah, shout out to Gunnery Sergeant Baudette. Let me tell you, oh my god, she was not like...
She's intense.
Yeah, she's a nice lady, don't get me wrong. Man, she... anyways.
Probably the scariest individual I've ever met in my entire life.
Yeah, but she's one of those ones, like, she knew us putting out, and so she didn't care. So
that's awesome.
You know what I mean?
I had a... Chief Igwe.
Yeah, Chief Igwe!
I had him for all three of my inspections.
Oh, wow. That's not supposed to happen.
And it was funny, because I had him for my NWU... And then I had him for 6 week, and then I had him for RLP.
I'm almost positive I have a picture of him screaming at you during the inspection.
Yes, and it is classic. Yeah. I showed it to him, and he was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
But it was funny, because he came up to me after 6 week, and he was like, did I have you for RLP? And I was like, yes, you've had me for everything. I feel like you literally... And it was funny, because after I had him for RLP, I swore... So I had him for NWU, and I was like, homeboy is just out to get me.
Mm.
Then I had him for RLP, and it was interesting, because during RLP, he was so hard on me. And then after, he comes up to me, and he was like, you got this. Why don't you believe in yourself? And it was one of those things where I was like, oh, he really wants me to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, not that like, but you know, when you're in the dock, you're just like,
you get one track mind, 100%.
Yeah, and you're just like so afraid of messing up, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And so it was really interesting because I had a mentorship session with him during Candio, and it was amazing.
Yeah,
you know?
He's one of the better ones, yeah, for sure.
And it was so cool to like watch, you know, and like watch it progress and all that kind of stuff. But it was really interesting because I was like 100% positive that like homeboy was like out to get me.
Nah.
And then I talked to everyone about their inspections and I was like, oh, Chief Igwe was helping me out. Like, you would not even believe the questions he asked me for 6 weeks. Pulls up and he goes, I had you for RLP. And I said, yes, Chief, you did. And he said, is this your first time wearing khakis? And I said, yes, Chief. And he goes, what's it mean to you to put khakis on? And
oh,
I was
God.
Like, da, 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 da. And then he goes, so how long did it take you to join the Navy? And I was like, oh, you know, like about a year. And he's like, so he like asked me about my process.
Mm.
And I'm like, none of these are Charlie questions. And then he goes, tell me the 11th general order. So I tell him, and he goes, so, what happens if I want to pass through you? Like, I'm scary. Like, are you going to let me? And I was like, no, I won't let you. And he's like, are you sure? Cause like, I can be intimidating.
It's
like,
a classic TV question.
And I was like, I promise you, I won't let you through. Like, I'll stand my guard. And he was like, all right, impressive. And then leaves. And I was like, what is going on?
Sometimes it's just a conversation.
Yeah. And so that was like, and it was just very interesting. Cause like, that's when, one, I had like kind of like a change in me, like my mental and like how I progressed through OCS. But like, it was interesting to see like they really do care so much about us and want us to succeed.
Well, I mean, think about it from the sense of like they put so much time into you.
Yeah.
Like, of course I want you to succeed. Nobody, none of those RDCs, drill instructors go to work and we're like, I'm going to mess them up for no reason today. Like, no, they're just like, okay, here's a plan. This is how we're going to make it better. This is the end goal. Let's get it. You know?
All right. Talk about how much we got messed up during Indoc.
Okay, we'll get there. But RLP, like when y'all did RLP, like I kind of, that's one of those ones that was a little harder for me because I couldn't prepare y'all as much as I would have liked to. Mm-hmm. Like at the end of the day, I couldn't step foot in y'all's room or your hatches,
yeah.
Right? Y'all had to do it all yourself. I can only tell you like fold it like this and yeah, that looks good, I guess.
Best
you know,
of luck.
Eyeballing it from the corner, like trying to get that perfect angle to see your wall locker and you know, I can't see your beds and like it's rough. And then I was a recorder, so I was actually seeing it unfold, and like they were just destroying y'all, and like seeing how many of y'all were like failing, or like how many of y'all were just like giving in, or like being like stopped, like it killed me because I felt like I had failed y'all, like I didn't do a good enough job to prepare you for that, and like man, it was rough, dude. Like I was just like, this is insanity. Like
no, because I learned that they have an X amount of number that they want to do retakes.
Maybe.
Because, I stood in on that conversation.
No.
Where, like, people literally were going to get failed, and then they were one of the last people to, like, take it.
I just... But, yeah, watching the RLP from that side was rough. I was not a fan. I didn't like...
Just because of, like, you know... But I don't even think we had that many failures. I think we had ended up having five. Not even five. Maybe four. Like, at the end of the... After retakes.
Don't remember.
We did not have that many.
But yeah, so that
but
was...
But it was not your fault.
Yeah, I just, yeah. But yeah, so, yeah. You know, that side of the fence of all the events is wild. Like, it's just...
What was it like watching our NWU inspection?
Well, that one was a little, like... The best thing about the NWU section, like, it's never going to go any other way than that. That's exactly how it's supposed to go.
1-6s. Listen to this. This was Staff Sergeant... I'm blanking on who their Staff Sergeant was.
Renteria.
Was it? Yeah, it was him.
He was my Staff Sergeant.
So... He had them. Was it Renteria? Yeah, it was Renteria.
Yeah, actually,
right.
That's who I was reporting for.
So, he had them bear crawl the length of the sand pit,
mm-hmm.
then get up, and they had to do exercises. And then they had to do exercises all the way down. So, like, they'd start here, and then everyone would be full. And so then the three, like, would be done at their 10 minutes, and he'd go. They'd make them roll and then do another exercise. And then more people would come, and then he'd roll. And you had to do exercises. I was like... It was probably one of the worst beatings I'd seen in a sand pit. They were disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah, Staff Sergeant, he gets real creative with that stuff.
I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's one of the, like, you know, kind of going, like, on that whole when people are getting, like, you know, pushed and stuff like that. It's always interesting, like, because, like, y'all got pushed a lot.
We got pushed
a
lot.
And
what was it like? Because I was like, there's no way that we are going to get beat again, and we, in fact, would get beat again and again and again.
I think I'll remember this for the rest of my life, because it was just one of those moments where I was like, oh, damn, this might be my fault, was y'all had got pushed for something, and it was Friday. Yeah, it was a Friday afternoon you guys got pushed, And one of the females, and I can't remember her name, and she was like, I think you're going to medical because I'm like hurting. I was like, unless it's an emergency room, like, you got to wait till Monday. She's like, well, do you think that we're going to get pushed again? I was like, there's no way in hell you're getting pushed again like this weekend. And then sure as hell, that next day, it was y'all's jock push. And like in on the grinder, she DOR'd. And I was,
who was that?
I don't know. I can't remember it for the life of me. But I feel like she figured out what was going on when you guys were standing on the grinder, and she was just like, "This ain't it." And then like, I don't know. Like I gave her a bad gouge or something, but it's gonna bother me for like the rest of my life.
I'm trying to think who that was. We had so many DORs.
Yeah, you did.
Pandemic
is what it was.
I did not realize we could have that many DORs.
Oh yeah, you can. Yeah,
and then and then after being like, once I was at Candio, realizing the process of a DOR, I was like, no wonder you guys hated us sometimes, because we just DOR'd left and right.
Yeah, yeah, it was rough.
Who was your DOR bod?
We didn't have one.
Oh.
Because Chief Igwe believed that everybody should know how to do it.
Mm.
But then Master Chief D didn't like that. She liked consistency and somebody who knows how to do it is going to make her life easier. So.
Yeah. Who ended up being it?
I don't know. It wasn't me, so I have no idea.
But yeah, no, I felt like we got pushed all the time. And was it interesting, like, watching it? Because I was in Knox staff, so I watched a lot of their beatings, and I would just sit there and I was like, I am trying not to, like, make a face.
Exactly what I was about to say. That's the hardest part, is I didn't know what to do. So if you, like, I don't know if you remember, if you look, I always just turned around and looked the other way. Like, really? I was like, I don't, let me just look
around.
Well,
imagine being the PAO and having people smile at you while they're getting beat.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, do you want to get beat some more?
That's what I used to love and hate about Casper. That dude was always smiling when you all were getting pushed. And I'm
he loved it. He was like, you know, when I go to the beach, I love going to the beach.
Casper, shut up, dude. Like, you're not helping.
Oh, I love Casper. Yeah. But yeah, no, I felt like we got beat left and right. And then I want to say, like, second weekend, I just was like, this is life, this is what it's going to be like, and I finally accepted it. But I think the hardest beat was we got beat 3 times after First Friday, and Saturday morning when I woke up,
mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't know if I've experienced pain like this.
Yeah, that was, what's funny is your class team tried to throw us on that Saturday morning, because it was like a 15-minute thing, like, hey, get my class ready. Like, what?
Because we did training country for
militarization. Yeah, out of nowhere.
And normally we do it on that Monday.
Exactly.
And so I was like, okay, I have all weekend to, like, recover. And then all of a sudden they're like, we're going down.
That's what it was. It wasn't jock push. It was
And I was like, are you kidding me right now? I was like, my body, I was like, I can barely walk down the stairs. My thighs are going to buckle.
Yeah. But hey, you got through it.
And then we got beat, 3 more times on familiarization?
Mm-hmm.
If not more?
Yeah, dude, that was a lot, dude. I was sitting there like, oh my God.
Yeah. That's like Friday. Saturday night was by far the worst night I had at OCS. Thank heavens for BB, because I like went up to her and I was like, I want this so bad. I said, but my legs hurt so bad. I was like, what do I need to do? And she was like, just ice and roll, ice and stretch, ice and roll. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. And like by Monday morning, I was like fresh again. And I was like, BB, I owe it to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it was rough. You had a rough time with that. But I mean, I think it just sets you up to be a better class as a whole.
Yeah.
Like,
talk about what you were talking to our class team about, why we got beat so much.
Oh, so when I asked, that was one of the questions, like, at the end, like, right before I graduated, I had a meeting with Chief Enfield. He wanted to talk to all of us on staff, just saying, hey, you guys did a great job. Thank you for, you know, putting time and the effort, blah, blah, teaching them. And I was like, you know, Chief, I have questions. He's like, what's up? I was like, why did you push them so much? Like, you know, there was 1,000,005 times where I was like, should I tell them to stop? Like, this doesn't seem right or legal, or like, we're going to kill these guys, you know? And he was like, you know, sometimes it was for something, like that one time while we're late, or, you know.
Bro, if we were late, it was game over.
You owe me. You're going to owe me. You know, and so I asked, and he was like, you know, sometimes, you know, it was for this other, but a lot of times it's just because they're just that good. Like, you know, it's not chill, calm down. You know, remember who your candios were. They were just that good, and so we just had to do something. We couldn't just let them not do anything. And so it's kind of that fear of God in their life. Like, even when they think they're doing everything right, you know, it's that complacency that kills.
Yeah.
So pushing y'all all the time broke up that complacency.
And I feel like that's what he did, because I remember, like, people got real up in arms about room inspections, about, you know, and it's like, I remember we probably...
Every day, dude.
We probably bore them, like, we probably drove them crazy with how many questions we had. And so, like, then finally, Chief goes, if your bed's flipped, just make it again. He said, I might walk in and it might be a mess, or I might walk in and it might be great. But I want you to practice and make your bed every day, so I'm going to flip it no matter what. And we went,
huh. Yeah, yeah.
And so that they were very big about not getting complacent. We got beat all the way up to the day of graduation. The morning of graduation, we got beat because Gunnery Sergeant Guerrero goes, I will not let you get like this.
That's fair.
You know, and so it was interesting because, like, in the moment, you know, like weeks 1 through 9, you're like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? You know? And so for me, what I tried to do so much is like all the speeches I gave to my candidates, I really tried to take after you, Clint. I gave so many speeches to them. And I said, I will try my hardest to tell you why. I will try my hardest to explain why, because it makes sense now as a Candio. And I promise if you can find the why and understand why you're doing this, OCS will be so good. And my Candios graduate on Friday, so I'm really proud of them. Oh. Or my Indocs graduate on Friday.
Damn, already, yeah.
I know, right? But like, truthfully, like once you learn why and you're able to rationalize like why you're going through this, why is this being asked of you, I think it makes a world of a difference.
Absolutely. And it's something that, like, we always, that's the kind of old Navy, like, way of thinking. Like, when I was, like, coming up in the Navy, you know, like, asking why was, like, a slap in your, you know, chief's face. Like, it doesn't matter why, just do it. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of like,
I feel like it's the new thing, though.
Yeah, what does it hurt just saying, like, hey, this is a big picture? Nothing. Like, okay, that makes sense.
That was Gunnery Sergeant Guerrero's, one of his biggest advice to us was he said, that he was like that at first. Like, you know, when he first joined, he was like, you don't need to say why. Like, you don't need to know. Just do it. You know, you're a junior. Like, you're junior enlisted. Go do this. He said, but when he, had those lessons, and he goes, when I got back from the drill field and I went, he goes, I realized that if I would take the extra 15 seconds and tell my junior enlisted why we were doing this and why this was being asked of us, he said, it was amazing the results I got. And he said, and that's what really changed him, was he goes, yeah, that might be the old way of doing things, is just do it and shut up because mm-hmm. you're a junior enlisted and this is what you're doing as I told you to do. But he said, the junior enlisted really wanted to know why. Yeah. And if I could give that to them, it made my life so much easier.
You lose nothing. It's a seamless transaction. Like, I mean, I feel like, you know, it makes no sense. Like, it makes no sense why you would harbor that information. Like, yeah. Dude, just give them a reason. You're absolutely right. And don't forget that. Like, keep that back.
And so that's what I tried to, like, always tell my indocs why. Like, I really liked to give them talks when they were lined up outside the outside the chow hall. So, like, when we were, like, walking back to Nimitz, when they're, like, lined up, I'd always talk to them then.
I talked too much for that. I didn't have time.
And so I was always trying to talk to them then. One, because I always, not I say always, I got yelled at, like, a couple times. Because they're, like, you're being too nice. And I was, like, I'm not supposed to be mean to them, you know? And so I always just did it at the chow hall because the staff wasn't there to tell me I was being too nice. One day I walk in and I always felt bad, you know, because they can't go anywhere without you, you know?
Right.
And so you're trying to teach the section leader how to do the procedures on the quarter deck. And so everyone's just standing there waiting, you know? And it was like, I want to say, a week and a half in, so I thought that they would at least like walk up the stairwell, but they didn't, you know. So I finished with the section leader and I see them, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry guys, go ahead, like keep going upstairs, like, you know. All of a sudden, Senior Chief Hoggood walks out and she goes, Candio! And I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
And I like walk in and she starts yelling at me and she's like, what did I just, you know? So she like goes into me and I'm just like standing there taking it, and it was so wild because midway through she's screaming at me. She flips the switch and she goes, but like, do you get what I'm saying though? Like, and I was like,
yeah, she's notorious for that.
What, you know, but like, and then she starts having a conversation. She's like, but like, and like has like an actual like constructive, like, this is why you gotta, you know, and things like that. And I was just like, okay. And then it was funny. Like, I walk up the stairs, you know, to make sure that they're like back in their hatches and stuff. And they're all like, are you okay?
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, like, your class, I only got 2 demerits the entire time I was your Candio.
You guys were nice enough to do the demerit workout in front of us.
I mean, like I said, if I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this because I'm going to make them know I'm suffering a little bit.
And but so, it was helpful to watch, and that's what I feel like I really appreciated with you guys as Candios, was you guys taught us things for us to learn, and it wasn't just like, I felt like a lot of times at OCS it can be like, do everything for yourself and not like for the good of the team. But I felt like you guys did a lot
that had nothing to like help you. You know, it was very selfless. A lot of your guys' acts were selfless and for the better of our class, not you guys.
Like I always said, even like when I was there as your candy, I like the thing I said in my speech when I left was like, I just wanted to be better than my candios were for me. Like, yeah. My candios were incredible. Like, absolutely incredible. And I just, that's what they told us. They're like, be better than us.
Yeah.
And so that's what I tried to do. So I did everything that they did and then some. And then you took that, that, and that, and added some. And so by the time we get to, you know, 1-0 attack, 2-6, like, the product of candios should be through the roof.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully. If they
and
keep consistent.
And I feel like that's, like, how it's going, though, because I feel like that's all it takes. You know, like, you don't realize, like, isn't there a saying about how, like, one butterfly flap can, like, cause, like...
Yeah, the butterfly flap, absolutely.
You know, and so I think sometimes that's how it can be. Like, one bad apple can ruin a bunch, but one good apple can really make an effect. And I think that's, like, what slowly happened at OCS was, like, slowly after slowly, it really did create this effect because I had my indocs come up to me and be like, thank you so much. Like, you have no idea how much you helped us. Yeah. And like what you did. And so like, it's cool to like see, and then I'm like, take that and do that for your indocs, you know, and how that can change everything.
That's the wild part. Like even here, be doing this for you right now, like you reaching out, I was like, oh, you know, the blah, blah. And like talking about me in your previous podcast, like I'm just doing what I was supposed to be doing. You know what I mean? Like,
but you don't realize like in the moment how much that can like actually affect and like change something.
Yeah. But, like I said, I just wanted to be better. And on that note of being better, like, you know, the whole process of me being here as a, you know, naval officer, being prior enlisted, I think one of my biggest attributing factors to wanting to be an officer is, I'll never forget it. I was in Eisenhower, and my division officer, he was a pilot. No, I'm not going to name him because I don't know if he's still in, and he's probably like an admiral by now, and I want that coming for me later. We were about to pull into port, and so me being the motivated second class that I was, I went ahead and started rehabbing a bunch of our spaces before we pulled in. So when we pulled in, it was less work we had to do.
Yeah.
And so my guys work through the night and stuff like that, like on different shifts to like get stuff done. And so we pull in and like I'm writing up the work list and I take it to our office and I'm like, sir, this is our work list. Chief okayed it, you know, blah. And it had us getting out of work at like 1 p.m. like every day because we were just so ahead of schedule, like for the yard period and stuff like that. And he was like, no, this isn't going to work. And I was like, sorry, sir. He's like, this isn't, no. He's like, he says here, you did all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yes, sir. He's like, do it again. And I'm like, huh? And he's like, do it again. And I'm like, but sir, it's done. These stations are like bare metal. Like they're just ready to be primed and like rehab and stuff like that. He's like, I don't care. Do it again. I'm like, there's nothing to do again. Like I don't. And so I look at my chief. My chief was just kind of shrugging. And I'm like, and I kind of did the same thing. Like I kind of just made this face. And my lieutenant looks up at me and he's like, you don't like it? And I was like, sir, I just don't understand it. And he's like, so you don't like it? And I was like, no, sir, I don't like it. And he's like, good. He's like, I'm glad you don't like it. Like, but you're not in charge here, are you? And I was like, no, sir. And he's like, okay, so if you don't like the way that I'm running this division, then take my job from me. And I was like, excuse me? He's like, take my job from me. And I was like, okay. And so I turned around and left. And that, I think, was that concrete nail that just kind of drove it home for me that, like, I need to do better than this. Mm-hmm. And no disrespect to, like, current naval leadership, because I've had some incredible naval leadership. But, like, there's always those few that just completely throw it, and I can't imagine how many times a sailor out there in the fleet's been discouraged to re-enlist or to continue their, you know, naval service because one leader just completely threw a wrench in the engine.
Yeah.
And so people ask me all the time, well, why'd you do it? You know, why are you here? You know, why do you want to serve? It's like, I just want to be better than what I had because I know it is completely possible. And the Navy doesn't have to be this cutthroat, you know, quote unquote, man's Navy and like, oh, no feeling. Like, it can be charismatic. It can be kind. It can be soft without it losing any kind of operational readiness. Yeah. Caring about people is not a bad thing. Giving a damn about your sailors is not a bad thing. And taking care of your sailors is something that is expected, not an option.
I love that. So. And it's funny that you say that. I don't know if you heard on the podcast. I can't remember if I went too into detail, but I had an experience where when I was CO, when I had somebody lie about the PRT. You know, ooh, long story short.
Rough.
And I had to let go about it, you know? And so I thought what was going to happen to this person was the same thing that happened to the person in your class. I thought they were going to get a trident, you know? That's all I knew was you lie on the PRT, you get a trident.
Yeah.
And so I remember going into my lieutenant's office. And shout out to Lieutenant Duffy. He is hands down one of the best naval officers I've ever met in my entire life. Like,
cool dude, yeah,
changed
for sure.
My outlook on a lot. And, like, I want to be like him, you know?
Absolutely.
So I go into his office. And, like, I'm pretty emotional, you know, because mm-hmm. I feel like, oh my gosh, her naval career is on my shoulders, mm-hmm. you know? And so we go through the whole thing. It ends up kind of getting dealt with. But when I walk in, I'm literally on the verge of tears. And as I'm telling him this, like, I'm starting to cry, you know? And I, like, calm down by the end of it. So when I went in for my, the peer evals to talk to, and I wanted to get mentored by him again after I was CO to see, like, how I could improve and stuff like that. You know, they praised me for how I handled it. And I said, well, I feel like one of the ways that I can do better is, like, not to get emotional. Like, I was upset that I, like, was teary-eyed and was, like, you know, like, when you're, like, throat gets all, you know?
Yeah.
And he and Chief Enfield were like, well, no, like, it showed us that you cared, you know? And he's like, obviously there's, like, a time and place, you know? He said, but don't let anyone think that, like, emotions can't be involved at all, because if you never have emotions, that's going to lead people to think that they can never have emotions and that we're not human, but we are.
Exactly.
And so it was very cool because, I mean, you know, both of my class team, like, oof, and like, right. very, you know, right. and it was so interesting for them to be like, emotions are normal and okay, and that doesn't make you a bad leader.
Facts.
It showed us that we cared. And I was like, did this just... Like, yeah. did you, you know? And so that was really helpful for me because I remember almost getting upset with myself because I was so emotional about right. it. And I felt like it weighed so heavy on me. But he was like, no, like, it showed us a lot about you. He's like, yeah, you know, maybe there's going to be certain situations down the line that, like, if you're talking to an admiral, maybe you shouldn't be crying.
Facts.
But he said, like, don't think that, like, having emotions is this bad thing because, like you said, sometimes we have people that leave the Navy because they meet somebody who has no emotions and can't take anything into account. And it's interesting because I think sometimes, like, I'm sure you've experienced where the mission, that's, like, so much the focus that you forget that there are so many, like, real-world variables that have to be, like, put into play.
Yeah. No, like, you're absolutely right. It's not at all a bad thing to have emotions. There's just a clear and decisive line as to where there's a point where I think you're emotional and you start to blur lines
mm-hmm.
and your judgment gets clouded. And when you can't, quote unquote, keep it together enough to execute said mission, people unfortunately get hurt or die.
Yeah.
And so you're right. Care, like, care the hell. Like, yeah, absolutely. Have emotions, you know, be sad, be happy for your sailor and stuff like that. But don't be emotional to the point where you cannot effectively do your job.
Yeah. And so I think that's interesting because I think a lot of times when you think of the military, you think of it as black or white. You think of either having no emotions or ruining the mission because emotions got in the way. But in almost all of life, there is so much gray.
Yeah, I'm human, dude.
And
like, yeah.
that, like, having that will, in fact, help my sailors more than hurt them. You know, it will show that I care for them and that I'm not, like, cold-blooded. And that was something that I felt like it was cool to learn OCS was, I think sometimes, I'm sure you've probably seen it, like, with women, I feel like it's hard to figure out what our leadership style is going to be, you know, because we're expected to be one way or expected to be another way. But for me, like, I realized, like, I'm not going to yell at anybody. That's not going to be the way that I do leadership.
You think that.
but for me, I've been able to see that, like, I can still gain respect. I can still have my task get done. My sailors still respect me
right.
and do what they need to do the way I do it. And I think, obviously, not everyone can do it that way. But at the same time, I think it's been cool to, like, learn that the Navy can be built up of so many different leadership styles and whatever works for you is able to work. And so I feel
right.
like that's, like, been a cool experience for me because I think sometimes at OCS you see, because it's a training environment, a very, like, one-sided way of leadership. But then, like, as you slowly go on through, you see their, like, real side, I think, sometimes.
Yeah. And that's where I think I get envious of, like, the non-priors is, like, the hardest part, and now even it's going to be amplified. This is actually one of the most worried things I'm worried about the most about being, like, in an actual, like, division officer role now. And, like, some advice for y'all here is when I went from third class to second class was the hardest point in my naval career because I went from hanging out with all my guys who were also third classes who were, like, E3 and below because mm-hmm. You know, junior enlisted, you just
yeah.
stick together, you know? There's 50 of us, and, like, we have nobody else to hang out with out here, so. But when I made second class, I was now a working like manager role, mm-hmm. and I can no longer associate with them in that fashion. And that was the hardest thing for me, because these are people that I deployed with. These are people that I saw every single day, and like, they crashed on my couch, I crashed on their couch, I went and picked them up because they drank too much. You know, yeah. like, these are things that I did for them, or, you know, we did together because that's just who we were. And then I was told, like, hey, you can't do that anymore, mm-hmm. because that's the expectation. And so now there's a very fine line you're going to have, or I'm going to have to walk, everybody has to walk at some point, where you want to be liked so bad by your subordinates, mm-hmm. because nobody wants to be disliked. We're very social creatures. But you have to understand that you have a job to do, and the second you give them that little bit of play, that little bit of edge, they're going to run with it.
Yeah.
So just a little bit of advice, just walk that line very, very carefully, and know the difference between like kindness and like weakness, and don't let them take advantage, because sailors are sneaky as hell. And I promise you, if they think they can get edge, they will.
Really?
So.
And I love the quote that you gave us where you, I think it was either before First Friday or Fast Cruise, and I ended up telling it to my in-docs because it like changed my life so much. Jesus, when you yeah. said, don't pray for an easier life, pray to be strong.
Yeah.
And pray to be strengthened. And it really changed my outlook, because I think so much we can be like, hey, God, take this trial away from us. Like, I don't want to deal with it anymore.
Yeah.
But like, truthfully, if we pay for strength, we're going to be so much more grateful that we're able to overcome that obstacle. And yeah. so I was really grateful for all of your motivational speeches and how much you like hyped us up, because it really truly made us believe in ourselves. When I feel like at OCS, you can really doubt yourself. And that was something that I thought a lot about when I was a Candio. We had a girl, DOR, and she was a prior. And I said, look, this is the biggest thing I learned at OCS. OCS amplifies your weaknesses to like the extreme. I said, but you have so many strengths. I said, so just because your weakness is being amplified right now does not take away that you have strengths. Yeah. And so that was a big thing that I felt like I learned throughout OCS, was my worth is not defined by like my run score or how well I do in this test. That like I have strengths, and I'm going to be able to be a good naval officer no matter what my weaknesses are. And so that was like really cool. And I felt like because of how much you believed in us and like how the Candios helped us, really put us like a step forward versus a step back for like our time at OCS.
Yeah, I said it every chance I had. Like, y'all came there for a reason. Y'all were all given the opportunity. Don't waste it. So go do the damn thing. I'd say I'm proud, but, or I'd say go make me proud, but I already am.
So. I love yeah. that. Okay, to close, is there anything else that you feel like you want to talk about, or any advice or things you've learned now that you've hit the fleet, or what's been like cool? Is it fun to, like, be saluted? Is it weird?
Oh, it's so weird. So I'll be walking down the street, and, like, they'll salute me, and I'll be like, what the hell's behind me? I'll be like, oh, right, it's me. No, it's great. Just do the damn thing, man. Whether you think you can or think you can't, or remember that a broken clock is right twice a day. So just do the damn thing. You got it.
That's nice. Okay, last thing. What are you most looking forward to being on DDG?
94. What am I looking forward to the most? Just being on your way, man. I love being out to sea. The sunsets, the moon rises, the stars,
was
the
it food.
Fun? Yeah. Life makes sense out there. We're sailors. We belong out to sea. Don't ever forget that.
I like that. That's all I got.
Thanks for having me. Had a great time.
Thank you so much. Anytime. I appreciate it.